Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music.
In celebration of more than 30 years producing travel shows for NPR affiliate KCPX and my NPR podcast, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, we've gone through the archives and selected best of the best from back in the day. Come along and join us in Xi'an, China, back in 2008, where I made friends with a young resident, Liu Zhongkui, as he recalls growing up in the midst of the darkest days of Mao Zedong's rule, when little kids like Zhongkui were forced to become little Red Guards. Come along and join me in Xi'an, China, back in 2008, as we visit with Liu Zhongkui. I'm your host, travel correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the People's Republic of China. Right now, we're in the ancient capital city of Xi'an. Please join us for a fascinating conversation with Liu Zhongkui as he shares some of his insights into growing up during the height of the Cultural Revolution and life in communist China today.
Quite interesting job. I met a lot of people, a lot of interesting things. I learned U.S., I learned something about the other countries, United Kingdom, Australia, and sometimes these things, it's different from the medium side. Like seeing is believing, and also when the people, they told me some stories about their country. We think it's so interesting, like Americans. Before your tour of China, what you expected and what you heard in your media is sometimes different from the reality.
It's hard to imagine a different country that you have not been to.
That's correct. We have 5,000 years history. The culture in China is so different. So every time I told them something about Chinese philosophy, Chinese culture, like Confucianism, Buddhism, and Taoism, because your religion is Christianity. Fundamentally, when there's God, it's Buddha, Islamic God. It's fundamentally, basically, it's the same thing.
Believing in God or not.
Yeah, believing in God. Yeah. Most people today are atheists, but just cultural stuff. In terms of culture, I think it's quite similar with each other.
Here in Xi'an, you said there's an Islamic community.
Yes, in Xi'an, there are 70,000 Muslim people across whole China. I remember it's 20 million practice this religion. Uh-huh. In Xi'an, 1% of population are the Muslim. They live in the community, almost in the center of the city. In downtown Xi'an, behind the drum tower, there's a Muslim quarters. They pray like their Arabic brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. There are 17 mosques. The oldest mosque is about 1,300 years old.
Oh, wow.
Well, people, they attended their religious services 5 times a day, especially on Friday. At that moment, you think, oh, you're not in China. You think that's in Middle East.
Yeah, yeah.
But the mosque in the community, that one, looks like a Chinese Buddhist monastery. Mm-hmm. However, you have those Arabic letterings, characters, and even their dome was not like the Arabic dome, blended dome. Their minaret was shaped like a pagoda, Chinese octagonal pagoda.
Oh.
So 5 times a day, imam would tell their people, all right, my full name is Liu Zhongkui.
Zhongkui?
Yes, Zhongkui.
Mm-hmm. But you go by Liu.
I go by Liu because that's my family name. Confucius say, no matter where you go, whatever you do, you can never forget your family name.
Yes.
So that's why I don't have English name. I like to keep Liu as my English name. Mm-hmm. I'm quite traditional. I was born in 1960s, and I have the Chinese education, quite a traditional Chinese education. So that's why my parents said, because sometimes American education, British education as well in the school, lots of my classmates like to have an English name, like a Smith, John, or this or that. But I still like to keep my name, my family name, Leo. For the rest of my whole life, I think I will.
You talked about your father and the entire village being Tai Chi master, and that was in Xi'an?
No, that was not in Xi'an. That was in Henan province, a neighboring province of Shanxi. And in that village, their ancestors, they were probably the creator, the founder of Tai Chi.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
So that's why their generation, they just followed their parents. And my father, he started to learn Tai Chi when he was a little kid, about 7 years old. He told me when he was a little kid, he was in poor health condition. He could not even digest a bowl of noodles. He's the only one in his family, so he's spoiled. But his parents did not spoil him and take him to the master of Tai Chi. After 3 months, he told me a magic thing happened. He could even digest 3 bowls of noodles.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Knowing how powerful the Tai Chi is, why have you not followed in that footstep?
Okay. Oh, that's a very interesting question. I have 4 more brothers. I'm the youngest son in my family. My eldest brother is about 57 years old. He followed my father's footsteps. He's also a very good Tai Chi master. I was born in the 1960s, and the culture of China, like Tai Chi, almost going away. And also at that time, 1960s and 70s, so it was time of Cultural Revolution.
Yes.
So our education was small things about communism, about Cultural Revolution. So that's why I did not take that time and the chance to do that. But about 10 years ago, I learned Tai Chi from my father. I'm not a master, but because you know, it takes quite a long time to get the essence and spirit of this movement of Tai Chi. Instead of just 24 movements or 83 movements, you just know how to play it, how to do it, but you do not get essence.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time,
yes.
2 or 3 years.
But you're still working?
I'm still working on that,
yeah.
You know, because I'm a bit lazy. excuse is my job. I got to get up early, go to bed late. So I got almost no time to practice. So that's a problem. I think in another 5 or 10 years after graduation, well, the time when I won't do this job, I retired from the job, I think I will. I will do that. You know, I pick that up.
Now, you were born in a very interesting moment in time in Chinese history.
That's correct.
Were you too young to be a member of the Red Guard?
I was not too young to be a member of Red Guards. I was actually a little Red Guard in elementary school.
Yes.
In 1974, that was the year I went to school. I was 7 years old. So I was like the model student.
Yes.
Because I could memorize, I could recite the Red Little Book,
yes,
quite well.
Yeah.
And I worked very hard. I was a diligent student. So in every class, 40 students, 5 could be the little Red Guards, mm-hmm, each year.
What we remember and what is talked about in the Cultural Revolution are mostly the negative things,
yeah,
the destruction of antiquities. But what are some of the positive elements of the Cultural Revolution that you remember? There must be some good there, too.
There must be some good, too. Well, probably I was too young. For me, I cannot remember something positive. But I can remember people at that time, we were poor. But, I think it's very hard to remember anything good, no. But
so do you think in hindsight, in looking back,
mm-hmm,
it was a mistake?
It was a big mistake. It was a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
My eldest brother did not go to college because of my family background. My father, my great-grandfather and my grandfather, they were the land owner in Henan province. So my brother, he did not go to college because at that time, they chose the students for college education according to their family background. If you were born in a poor family, ordinary worker, or students, you'll be qualified for the college education. But if your father was a capitalist or landowner, no way.
So what we were talking about is that we're trying to find, was there any good in the Cultural Revolution? Because there are so many negative things about it. And
everything is so bad, so negative. I cannot figure out, I cannot think out. I cannot find anything which is positive for us. Everything is two sides, I know that, positive and negative. But for the Cultural Revolution, no. And my family is also the victim of Cultural Revolution. My father, he was not like me. He's not talkative. my father always criticizes, you always talk your head off. But my father is quite quiet.
Is that partly because he knew he could get in trouble?
That's correct.
Yes.
That's correct. So every time, you know, there was lots of the meetings political government meetings at that time. So my father would say, my mother told me just several years ago, if I was in big trouble, if they took me to the street for demonstration or something or persecution, you don't have to cry. You don't have to show up. You just stay inside our house. You just pretend you know nothing. But my father was quite strong, and he was quiet, not talk so much. So he avoided a lot of trouble, actually. Dislike, we still hate this cultural revolution.
Yeah. Lots of regret then.
Lots of regret.
Leo, we were talking earlier about China is a communist country. In the West, you hear only the bad things about communism, you know, the negative. As you know, that's the way the world works. In your life today, what positive characteristics of your form of government and life under communism are positive elements?
Okay, well, I don't know so much about communism, the capitalism.
Sure.
But I know that this government today is doing a great job. People have much better life. That's what I know. See, 20 years ago, if you were in China, if you visit China, no television, no fridge, no tape recorder. But today, see, people, they talk on the cell phone from here to there. So lots of people use the cell phone, a home phone, and a big television at home. Mm-hmm. That's what I know.
So you can get what you want. And
that's
how
correct.
About freedom, what they talk about, freedom of speech?
Okay.
That's something, you know, in America people are proud of.
Okay. There's something in America they're proud of in the United States, the speech freedom, something like that. Mm-hmm. But in the time of Cultural Revolution, we did not have that. No freedom to talk whatever we wanted to talk. Mm-hmm. But today, I think it's quite, people enjoy more and more human rights.
Could you speak negatively about the president of the premier of China and not have a fear of?
Oh, yes, I think so. I think lots of people, we talk about the achievements the ex-prime minister have made, or maybe the downside of the prime minister. People around us, we can talk whatever we want. So I think it's different from 20 years ago.
Sure.
That was only the story 20 years ago, the phenomenon 20 years ago, but not today.
Tiananmen Square, the protests in 1989. Could something like that happen again?
Oh, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think that was the story 20 years ago. People, that was just the opening up of the country. People, we were quite confused. We didn't know what to do. At that moment, people, lots of the students, they went to the street and they protest. They thought that was they were in big hurry. They thought government could change its policy. People could have better life.
Instant.
People, they think that they did that, they could change the life of the people, improve the living standard of the Chinese people. But on the contrary, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think stabilization of the country, I think that's the top priority.
We've been speaking with Liu Shanquai in the city of Xi'an in the People's Republic of China. This is your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting for KCBX and KCBX HD1 serving San Luis Obispo and KSBX serving Santa Barbara, reporting from the People's Republic of China.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.